world how he had abandoned her. "They found her body in the upstairs hallway," said Grigor morosely, "dead of smoke inhalation." Humphreys felt a surge of relief flow through him, but he growled, "Fuchs. He's responsible for this. I want Fuchs's balls on a platter."
"Yes, sir," said Grigor. "I'll see to it right away. And fire that dumb son of a bitch who was in charge of security from my house."
"Immediately, sir."
"You've got to rest, Mr. Humphreys," the doctor said, placing a placating hand on Humphreys' arm. "You've been through an ordeal that would..."
"Fuchs," Humphreys raged, shaking loose of the doctor. "Find him, kill the bastard."
"Right away, sir."
Humphreys fumed and ranted all the way up the power stairs and into the sumptuous hotel suite that the woman from the personnel department had reserved for him. A full dinner was waiting on a wheeled table set up in the sitting room. Humphreys blurted orders and demands as he stormed into the suite and went straight to the lavatory. Even while he stripped off his sweaty clothes and stepped into the steaming shower, he still yelled at the aides, including the blonde swirling around him. "And another thing," he called from the shower. "Get my insurance adjusters down to the mansion and see to it that they have a complete list of all its contents. Goddamn fire ruined everything in there. Everything." Aides scurried and took notes on their handhelds. The doctor wanted to give Humphreys an injection of tranquilizers, but he would have none of it.
"But you've got to rest," the doctor said, backing away from his employer's raging shouts.
"I'll rest when Fuchs's body is roasting over a slow fire," Humphreys answered hotly, while he struggled into a row being held for him by the head of his public relations department. He stormed into the sitting room, glared at the dinner waiting for him, then looked up at the small crowd of aides, assistants, and executives.
"Out! All of you! Get the hell out of here and leave me alone!"
They hurried toward the door.
"You,"
he pointed to Grigor, "I want Fuchs. Understand me?"
"I understand, sir. It's as good as done.
He can't get out of Cellini. We'll find him."
"It's his head or yours," Humphreys growled. Grigor nodded, looking more morose than usual, and practically bowed as he backed away toward the door. The doctor stood uncertainly in the center of the sitting room, a remote sensing unit in his hand.
"I should take your blood pressure, Mr. Humphreys."
"Get out!" The doctor scampered to the door. Humphreys plopped himself down on the wide, deep sofa and glowered at the covered plates arranged on the wheeled table. A bottle of wine stood in a chiller, already uncorked. He looked up and saw that everybody had left. Everybody except the blonde, who stood at the door watching him.
"Do you want me to leave, too?" she asked with a warm smile.
Humphreys laughed. "No." He patted the sofa cushion beside him. "You come and sit here." She was slim, elfin, wearing a one-piece tunic that ended halfway down her thighs. Humphreys saw a tattoo on her left ankle, a twining, thorned stem that bore a red rose.
"The doctor said you should rest," she said with an impish smile.
"He also said I need a tranquilizer."
"And a good night's sleep."
"Maybe you can help me with that," he said.
"I'll do my best."
He discovered that her name was Tatiana Oparin, that she worked in his personnel department, that she was ambitious, that she would be delighted to replace the late Victoria Farrar as his personal aide. He also discovered that the rose around her ankle was not her only tattoo.
Grigor Malenkovich noted in his silent but keen-eyed way that Tatiana stayed behind in Humphrey's suite. "Good," he thought. "She is serving her purpose. While she keeps Humphreys occupied, I can start the search for Fuchs without his hounding me." "The place to start is the hospital," he told himself. "All four of the intruders have been brought there. They are under guard. One of them is undoubtedly Fuchs himself. Or if not, then he knows where Fuchs is." He went directly to the hospital, only to be told by Cellini's security officers that all the people taken from the fire scene were under protective custody. "I want to ask them a few questions," said Grigor. The woman in the coral-red Cellini coveralls smiled patiently at him. Tomorrow, Mr. Milankovitch, you can be present when we interrogate them. Grigor hesitated a moment, then asked, Why not now? Why wait? The medics say they need a night's rest. One of them was wounded, you know, and all of them have had a pretty rugged time of it. All the better. Question them while they are tired, worn down. The woman smiled again, but it seemed forced. Tomorrow, Mr. Milankovitch, once the medics okay it, we'll talk to them tomorrow. Grigor thought it over. No sense getting into a quarrel with Cellini security, he decided. Besides, Humphreys is busy enjoying a good night's rest, or something of the kind. You can't take patients out of the hospital without authorization, said the doctor. He was young, with a boyish thatch of dark brown hair flopping over his forehead. Wanamaker thought he probably made out pretty well with the female hospital staffers. He kept his thoughts to himself, though, and put on his sternest, darkest scowl. This is an Astro Corporation security matter, he insisted, his voice low but iron hard. They were standing at the hospital's admittance center, little more than a waist-high counter with a computer terminal atop it. The doctor had been summoned by the computer, which normally ran the center without human intervention. Wanamaker had waited until midnight to fetch Fuchs and his people out of the hospital, minimal staff on duty. He had brought six of the biggest, toughest-looking Astro employees he could find. Two of them actually worked in the security department. The other four consisted of two mechanics, one physical fitness instructor from Astro's private spa, and a woman cook from the executive dining room. The doctor looked uncertainly at the identification chip Wanamaker held out rigidly at arm's length. He had already run it through the admittance center's computer terminal, and it had verified that Jacob Wanamaker was an executive of Astro Corporation's security department. I should call Cellini's security department, the doctor said. Aren't they guarding the four? Wanamaker demanded, knowing that they had been called off by one of his own people who had hacked into their computer system. Not on this shift, said the doctor. They'll be back in the morning at 0800. All right, then, Wanamaker said. I'll deal with them in the morning. Right now, I've been instructed to take the four to Astro headquarters. Wanamaker was thinking, if this young pup doesn't cave in, I'll have to slug him. He didn't want to do that. He wanted this extraction to be painless. The young man's face was too bland to frown effectively, but he screwed up his features and said, This hospital is run by the governing board of Cellini, not Astro or any other corporation. Wanamaker nodded knowingly. Very well, you contact your governing board and get their okay. The doctor glanced at the wall clock. It's almost 1 a.m. Yes, that's right. They'll all be asleep. Then you'll have to wake them. Wanamaker hoped fervently that the kid didn't think of calling Cellini's security department. That could create a problem. Before the doctor could make up his mind, Wanamaker suggested, Why don't you call Douglas Stavanger? Mr. Stavanger? The doctor's eyes widened. He knows about this? And he's given his approval, Wanamaker lied. Well, is there any medical reason to keep them hospitalized? Wanamaker demanded. The doctor shook his head. No, they're supposed to be released in the morning. Very well, then. Give me the release forms and I'll sign them. I don't know. Wanamaker didn't wait any further. He walked past the puzzled, uncertain young doctor. His six subordinates marched in step behind him, trying to look fierce, as Wanamaker had instructed them to do.
Armstrong Spaceport. As the cart trundled to a stop at the end of the tunnel that led back to Cellini, Wanamaker noticed that the lower half of Pancho's right leg was wrapped in a cast. She looked grim, almost angry, as she sat behind the cart's wheel with her legs sticking out onto the fender. Fuchs was standing beside Wanamaker, also far from happy. His three aides were already on their way to the little rocket shuttlecraft that would take them up to the vessel, waiting in orbit above the moon's rugged, airless surface. Humphreys is alive and well, said Pancho, without getting down from the electric cart. No thanks to you, Lars. His mouth, a downcast slash, Fuchs answered, Too bad. The world would be better off with him dead. Maybe so, but all you did was kill a dozen or so of his people.